The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 76 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What?
I really need to congratulate you on that Grammy you won last night.
Did I?
I saw one song that had, who was it? Drake and who
was me?
Travis Scott.
Oh.
And there were about 4 million people who were giving a writing credit for the song, so I just figured you were one of them.
Well, I do have a little side job.
I mean, you
writing
are
songs for
hip-hop artists?
Hip-hop artists, yeah.
For people who don't know, and this is the God's honest truth, or whatever deity you believe in, truth, Michael Smith is about as well-versed in hip-hop as any human being I have ever been around. It's
I don't
amazing.
Know if that's true.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Every time we go out and there's any kind of, is it jukeboxes anymore?
I don't know. I think it's fair to call it jukeboxes, yeah.
You go and you're like, oh, know that, know that, know that. And then you know the words to all of them, which is even more impressive.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 76 of Canes Cast, alongside TV's Mike Maniscalco.
Oh, hi.
I'm the Web's Michael Smith.
Good to be here.
We're in Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah.
It's really cold outside. About, 15 degrees Fahrenheit?
10.
10 degrees Fahrenheit.
10 was what it said on my weather report.
And it's reached a point where the snow on the ground is just completely packed in and glazed over.
It's ice. You could skate on top of the snow.
Exactly. And it's just going to be there until summer, I guess.
Forever.
Forever and ever.
Yeah.
So it's just a way of life here.
If I could go on a sidebar, because this road trip that the Carolina Hurricanes have been very good on, a five-game road trip where they have won 3 of the 4 games and the 5th game coming up tomorrow night, or if you're listening tomorrow today, or if you're listening tomorrow night right now, or the game's already over, and yay, hopefully the Canes won. They've been really good. But seeing it's kind of been like a homecoming for our staff in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we go to Pittsburgh. We have a few guys who are from there.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Buffalo. That's my hometown.
It's
John Forslund likes to point out a lot. And my family was there. If you were watching the broadcast, that was them when I said, hi, Mom and Dad. Then we went to New York, where a few more members of the staff are from New York City. And then we went to New Jersey, where Bill Burniston is from, strength and conditioning coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, and Mike Sunheim, public relations director. They are New Jerseyites, so we just have that all taken care of.
New Jerseyans.
Okay.
I don't know.
Whatever. I don't know. I thought it was New. Yeah. New San Diegans. So, with that being said, Michael, we now come to Ottawa. This is the home of Calvin DeHaan. He grew up just 20 minutes outside of here, and Tristan Simmons, who also has another name that our broadcast crew has dubbed him.
Yeah. McGee.
Yes.
Well, Fingers.
That's from John and Trip Tracy. So here you go. A lot of preamble. So let's get to the good stuff. When I was talking about, you know, the snow, people think it's just here forever. So let's just go ahead and live with that. Being in the cold weather cities that we grew up in, yes, the snow never goes away, folks.
Never goes away. And there's more on the way, too, apparently.
We'll cross that snowy bridge when we get to it. I do know this.
Well, hopefully we get out of town before the snowy bridge even becomes a problem.
Look, people always ask, how do you deal with it? And the answer is simple. Dog sleds and mucklucks. All right? That's it. So I hope you brought yours, because my dog sled team's in the room right now.
Oh.
Ready to go.
Well, maybe I can rent one from the concierge desk or something.
They might have a few. It is Ottawa. It is cold. All right. After that ramble, let's get to the road trip, Michael Smith. And it's been very, very good for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, it started off with, I think, arguably the two most important games of the trip, because you're facing off with teams you're chasing in the standings, in the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Buffalo Sabres. And those are four-point swing games that you need to absolutely have go in your favor. Now, you look at the back three games in the road trip against the Rangers, the Devils, and the Senators, teams below you in the standings, wins that, as Rod Brindamore said yesterday, you should have, you need to have. But I look at those first two games, and if you're giving away 2 points to those two teams, that's going to make it even harder to catch them in the standings. So for the Hurricanes to go to Pittsburgh and just really dominate, I think, in all areas of the ice was really impressive to see, and kind of set the tone for this road trip led by Curtis McElhinney there in net.
Yeah, that Pittsburgh game, I think, from top to bottom, was the best game that the Carolina Hurricanes played all year. Suffocating defense, and I know there was no Evgeny Malkin, but there was Sidney Crosby. That's a team that is capable of scoring a bunch of goals, and the Canes gave them nothing. Curtis McElhinney was not tested a lot, but when he was brilliant. He gets the shutout. And then when the offense started to flow, you get that big goal late in the first period, and you can kind of exhale. You have the lead, and the team just put their foot on the gas and didn't let up, and they ran the Pittsburgh Penguins out of their own building. Then you go to Buffalo, and there's a back-and-forth game. The Canes jump out 2-0. Sabres come back. Then it starts going back and forth, and the Canes grab a 5-3 lead late in the third, and you're thinking this game's over, but the Sabres come back and force overtime, and you're like, oh, man, that's a backbreaker because you had 2 points in your pocket. Now you got to go to overtime. What happens here? Your former teammate, Jeff Skinner, led the charge on the comeback for the Buffalo Sabres, and, you know, that's one of those things where you're writing the Hollywood script. We're sitting there going, well, I think we know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't because Teuvo Teravainen ended it with a brilliant move. A sick move, as the kids would say, in OT. What I think that stinks about that game is you gave a point back to the Buffalo Sabres. That's right. The only thing that I'll go back to, because you're talking about four-point games. That becomes a three-point game.
A three-point game that we're only going to see more of those, I think, down the stretch because games become tighter and tighter as the season goes on.
We saw it that night. There were eight games that went to overtime that night.
And so you're just going to see more points start to be distributed in the standings. It's already tough enough to have any movement. It's only going to get tougher.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way that it will play out from here. But then the Canes go to the next night, Madison Square Garden, where you're thinking, okay, back-to-backs, Michael Smith. A place they haven't won since 2010, 9 years. Really not a lot of logic behind it other than Henrik Lundqvist has been in New York, and he's been pretty good for that time. And they've had a few good teams, but you know, nothing that would say 9 years where you play a team basically twice, so 20 times over that stretch. It was 16 times for the Hurricanes over that stretch. That would lead you to believe that they couldn't get a win.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in there, and it's a tight game. You played the night before. You played in overtime the night before. Then you get into New York City. By the time you get to the hotel, it's about, what, I think 1 a.m, close to it.
Yeah,
close to it, give or take. And you're thinking, oh, boy, this could be the one. And the Canes found a way to play a really good road game. Rod Brindamore said, you know, we're tied after 40 minutes on the road. That's all you can ask for. Now you have a chance to go out and win a hockey game if you play your period. And the Carolina Hurricanes got to their game and played that period the way that we saw in Pittsburgh. And then you go to New Jersey, and it's an afternoon game on Sunday. I'm not making excuses. The Canes just didn't have a good first period. They came out, maybe a few good shifts, a few moments here and there, but overall that was a flat period. The power play wasn't very good for the Canes, and they found themselves trailing after one. And, you know, it's 2-0, and it's so hard in this league for whatever reason to chase a game. Now you got to chase a game on the road, and you only got 2 periods to do it.
Well, and especially against a team in New Jersey who for years has just succeeded when getting a lead and then just sitting on it. And you saw it exactly there in the second period. The Hurricanes pushed back, of course, and came out with a much better second period. But the Devils were content not to really do much in the offensive.
Two shots on goal.
Yeah,
That's all the Devils had.
And that is a big credit to what the Hurricanes were able to do in terms of possession and in terms of cutting the Devils off before even being able to establish anything in the offensive zone. But it also speaks to the Devils' philosophy and the way they like to play, the way they kind of have to play with the team they have built in order to be successful. But the Hurricanes pushed. They pushed late. You thought they might be able to maybe tie it up there late with the extra attacker on, but it was the one period, the first period, hurt the team. And that's what Rod Brindamore was concerned about prior to the game, is you had a team in New Jersey who played Saturday afternoon. The Hurricanes had not touched the ice since Friday night at Madison Square Garden. And I think you've seen it this year with the Hurricanes where if they're facing a team who's been waiting around, and not that the Hurricanes were waiting around for any prolonged period of time. It had been a day. But when you've played the day prior, for whatever reason, you're fresher. Your legs are kind of in the game mode. You're ready to go. Your mindset is there. And that's what it looked like in the first period. It looked like one team was more prepared than the other. And the Hurricanes really when they needed a spark from their power play the most there in the first period.
They didn't get it.
They had three chances and didn't get it. So that when you break down what happened in Sunday's game, that's exactly what happened. They had one bad period, and it cost them the game.
Well, you know, what we've seen all year from this team, and I'll go back to something that the head coach has said, everybody has to be pulling their weight in the course of a game. Everybody has to play their part. And at the same time, Michael, they can't take a breath. This is a team that can't take a period off. The margin of error for the Hurricanes is extremely slim compared to some teams around the National Hockey League. So when they're on, like we saw in Pittsburgh, they're amazing. When they let their foot off the gas or have a bad period, they weren't awful against New Jersey. It wasn't like that they were just terrible and just got beat for 60 minutes, and how do you lose to a team like that? They had a bad period. And like you pointed, Jersey's a team that'll come back and, all right, we'll sit on this lead. We'll try to win the game 2-1.
Right. Once they get that lead, especially a 2-0 lead after the first period, you know they're just going to sit on it.
Yeah.
And they were able to – that third goal turns out to be very important that they were able to get in the third period just in a simple transition play. And they were able to stretch that lead and hold on for the victory. And that's just the game they play, and they rely on solid goaltending, which Keith Kincaid gave them yesterday.
And Keith Kincaid, that's one of those things where, you know, some guys have some teams' numbers. Keith Kincaid is 8-2-0 against the Hurricanes now. I think his goals against, even though he let in two, is still below two because of how he played. And his save percentage was like 94 going into that game against the Hurricanes. Like, that's one of those things you can't figure out. And I know Peter Mrazek owns some teams. I know Curtis McElhaney owns some teams. It just happens through the course of the career. But I'm glad you brought up goaltending, because the Hurricanes did something over the first three games of the road trip they've never done as a franchise. Two shutouts over three games by two different goalies.
Yep.
And the goaltending this year, we've talked about it a lot, but I think we could talk about it even more, has been steady, and it gives the Canes a chance to win the game every single night. Every single night. Peter Mrazek wasn't faced with, you know, 50 shots in that Ranger game, but some of the shots were grade A, high-quality chances. And then the Canes also have a secret weapon. I didn't know that this was legal, but they have another goaltender on the ice. His name is Jacob Slavin, who made, I think, three saves in that game against the Rangers to keep the shutout going, to keep the Canes in it when it was a nothing-nothing game.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You look at the plays he made, the play in the first period to tie up Jimmy Vesey, who otherwise would have had a pretty easy tap-in.
Oh, yeah.
His play on the goal line to stuff Kevin Hayes, who a really good move to work his way around Mrazek and try to tuck the puck
in. Yeah, have an empty net, yeah.
Slavin had his stick there on the goal line. And then in the third period, Slavin sort of twists his way down to his down to the ice and reaches out and blocks a pass that would have gone to a player right on the top of the crease. So he saves two for sure goals,
yeah.
And one at least grade A scoring opportunity that the Rangers would have had. That's the difference in the game, because you're looking at a 0-0 hockey game, which was a really, really entertaining hockey game, by the way. From my vantage point, it was a lot of fun to watch for the players to play in. They said it's fun to play in because you can feel the emotion.
Yeah.
You can feel just how momentous that first goal is going to be. And everyone's out there trying to be the difference maker and get that first goal. But for those plays to be made and keep it 0-0, that's huge, because otherwise you're looking at a Rangers team that has a two-goal lead at least in the second period.
And there's one other thing I wanted to bring up on the goaltenders. We hear this a lot. Well, the team plays different in front of goalie A than they do goalie B. And I believe the reason why the Hurricanes since January 1st, and even before that, the December record didn't show it, but – all season long, they've played the same in front of their goaltenders. It's not this includes Alex Nedeljkovic, who got his first career start and win in Vancouver that we talked about a few weeks ago. It included what was going on with Scott Darling. It just, you run down the list, but how they play in front of Curtis McElhinney and in front of Peter Mrazek, it's the same game. They don't say, oh, we got to be more defensive tonight because it's this goalie over that goalie. They play the same game, and both goalies do their job very well right now. You know, Curtis McElhinney is very calm in the crease. And it's funny because they're two different goaltenders. Because yeah. Curtis McElhinney is very calm in the crease. He's not an attacking goalie where, you know, you see him drift too far out of the blue paint. But Peter Mrazek is a battler. He'll go out of the paint. He'll make saves. He'll be, I hate to use the term unorthodox because I don't think that's the case anymore in the league. But the team in front doesn't change how they play.
Right.
And that's, I think, been the key to why this Hurricanes team has had 25 points, which was the best in the National Hockey League going into yesterday since January 1st.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, allowed Mike Bales, the goaltending coach, and the coaching staff to really go with either of the goaltenders on any given night. I mean, you've seen the team sort of rotate between the two here recently. There, it's much of a 1A, 1B situation.
Yeah.
Or a A1, A2. I mean, it's so tight right now in that the Hurricanes are utilizing both goaltenders, relying on both goaltenders, and seeing success with both goaltenders too, which is pretty remarkable. And it's nothing against either of them, but if you would have said that the Hurricanes would be at this point and be having such success with Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhinney, even if you would have said that at, I don't know, you know, May 1st of last year, you know, that would have been hard to believe because neither goaltender were even on the team's radar at
the
time.
If you would have told me on August 1st, that's how that would have played out.
Yeah.
Where you had one goalie on the radar and the other one was still in Toronto. But I think that goes back to my point. The team plays the same in front of these guys because these guys give the team the exact same chance to win every single night. And, you know, for people who freak out over this guy should play over that guy, no, I like the rotation. And Mike Bales is doing a great job of knowing when to say, let's go with Curtis McElhinney tonight, where it could be one of those situations. You would think that let's keep going with Peter Mrazek. Or it's the, hey, we know that we got back-to-backs. We like this guy against this team, that guy against that team, and we're going to play the schedule out that way. They have done a really good job of handling the workload. And, of course, in Curtis McElhinney's situation, he's got that lingering lower body situation that he's had for a couple of years in his career now. So they manage him well. They know when to put him in. They know when to push. And then with Peter Mrazek, they know when to ride him when he's the hot hand. So they've handled the goaltending situation, I think, just about as, you know, nobody will ever say perfect because you'll be like, well, how do you lose a game if it's perfect? But they've handled a goaltending situation as close to perfect as you can get with two goalies, like you've said, who both of them have proven that they should be the one for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no argument. There's no drop-off in play with these guys in the nets, and that's what I've loved about this stretch for Hurricanes hockey, and I hope the fans have been enjoying it too.
And it's looking ahead a bit too, but it will be interesting to see how they handle both of those goaltenders heading into this offseason because, of course, they both would be free agents.
Yeah.
Peter Mrazek signing that one-year contract back on July 4th, or excuse me, 1st, to prove himself. And he's certainly done just that as a viable starting goaltender in the NHL. And the Hurricanes picking up Curtis McElhinney, perhaps the greatest waiver claim in team history. I mean, there haven't been too many waiver claims in team history to begin with. But to find a player of that caliber who's contributed in the way that he has, it was just a very, very timely situation for the Hurricanes to have had that happen. And he's been a great find.
Oh, he's been everything you can ask him to be. But let's go a little bit deeper into this road trip. And you brought up something that it made a lot of sense to me when we talk about how it's played out as we are doing this podcast, episode 76, Michael Smith's Grammy. Here.
I think it's being delivered to Raleigh. It'll be there when I get back.
I thought we were going to give it to you in a pregame ceremony tomorrow.
Oh.
On Hurricanes
television?
Live.
Well, stay
tuned. I was
going
to go over with our producer on that, but I don't know where the Grammy is here at Canadian Tire Center. But, or excuse me, Centre, as the R is in front of the E here in Ottawa, the capital of Canada. But when the Canes go 3-0 to start this road trip, you know, everything's amazing. That's, by the way, a Zamboni that you're hearing that I think is a little bit too close to the boards. But to point out, you go 3-0, you beat Pittsburgh, you beat Buffalo, you break that curse with the New York Rangers. And then the small freak out over losing to New Jersey. And people are like, you can't lose to teams like that. And the short answer here for the Hurricanes, where we are with, what, 26 games left on the schedule?
Correct.
You really can't afford to lose any games, Michael.
Correct.
But would people have been happier if they would have lost to Pittsburgh and then beat New Jersey? To me, that's worse because of what you said. If you lose to Pittsburgh, not only do you lose that game, that's a four-point swing. Pittsburgh puts themselves 2 points further in front of you.
And should it come down to the head-to-head matchup, they get the leg up in the head-to-head.
But it's just one of those things. Look, no losses are good losses. There's no such thing as that. But to sit there and say, oh, you can't lose to New Jersey. New Jersey are professionals. They get paid to play. They do want to win games at home. You know, nobody wants to be booed at home. They want to win games. They're putting out a lineup that wants to prove that they're NHL players. So they're not going to go there and be like, oh, well, the Hurricanes are in front of us in the standings. We're not going to play hard today. No, they're going to play hard. And sometimes playing against those teams, when you are a playoff caliber team, it's harder to win those because the human nature is, oh, this game means nothing to them. Well, no, it does. And folks, I can tell you that. These games mean everything to every player, every coach, every general manager, that there's something to prove every night. But I just don't – I've never understood the, oh, you can't lose that. Oh, well, what's the better loss?
Well, here's the way I look at it. And it does – any loss stings. Sunday's loss in New Jersey stings. It stings because it's a loss. It stings because it's a loss to a team that is in essentially the bottom of the Eastern Conference. It stinks. But when you pull back and look at the bigger picture of it, because I do think you have to do that, the team has a chance to get 8 of 10 points on this road trip,
yep,
which I think everybody would agree is a wildly successful road trip. And if you look at that four-game stretch, the team went 3-1. 26 games left. If the team goes 3-1 in four-game stretches in the 26 games that are remaining,
they'll be a playoff team.
They'll be a playoff team. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not saying that's sustainable. But when you look at the bigger picture of it, it maybe doesn't seem as bad.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not trying to gloss over that loss to New Jersey. It's a bad loss. You should beat that team. But I'm just asking the question of what's preferable then? You're not going to win every game.
Right.
So, as Michael laid out, and that's why he's the Web's Michael Smith, he's a treasure, and he drops all of these gems. If you lose that game to Pittsburgh, that becomes a four-point swing there. Now you're chasing even more points to get into the playoffs. So, if you're going to tell me that the Canes were going to go 4-1 on this road trip, sorry, Ottawa fans, if you're listening, and the loss was going to come in New Jersey, well, I'd say it would have been better to go 5-0. We all agree on that. The New Jersey loss, while it stings and a win would have put the Canes in a playoff position, that's not a four-point swing game. That's not like losing to Buffalo. If you would have lost to Buffalo, guess what? Buffalo is now in front of you
and,
as far as points go.
You know, and jumping into a playoff position at this time of year, it doesn't mean much. It looks nice, but it doesn't mean anything.
I would like to see it, though, because I would like to see how this team plays in that spot. You know what I'm saying, Michael? Like, does it give them extra confidence? Does it put extra pressure on the team if they found a way to put themselves in that final wild card spot? And, you know, Pittsburgh's going to play tonight. They're going to play Philly. Philly is all of a sudden red hot.
Yes.
But
still, I think, too far out of it, but red hot and making a push because Carter Hart.
Hutton's in Buffalo.
Correct. Carter Hart has been playing the best hockey of his young career.
Well, it's his first time playing in the National Hockey League, and he has shown that he is not afraid of the bright lights and the big shots.
Now, again, is it sustainable? I don't know, but...
Well, again, they're in that position. Here, as of recording this episode of the Canes Cast, the Pittsburgh Penguins have played 55 games. They have 63 points. The Carolina Hurricanes have played 56 games. They have 62 points. The Buffalo Sabres have played 55 games. They have 61 points. And the Philadelphia Flyers have played 55 games. They have 57 points. So I think the Flyers are just – they dug themselves too big of a hole
that's
to
really
climb out of.
The – you know, when you underscore how hard it is to really
move
up in the standings.
Although they are 9-0-1 in their last 10.
Correct. they're 9-0-1 in their last 10, and they're still, what, 6 points out?
Yes. If they would be in the West, I think that they would be winning the Pacific Division.
If any of these teams were in the West,
yeah, I know.
Honestly, a couple of them would make the playoffs.
Philadelphia would be 2 points out of a playoff spot in the Western Conference.
The Western Conference is
cuckoo.
Weird.
Cuckoo.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to describe it. When you have a team that fires its coach and has won one game in its last 50 or, you know, something like that, and is still 5 or 6 points out of the playoffs.
You're referring to Anaheim?
Yes.
8.
Oh, 8 points now? Okay, yeah. So it's becoming less and less of a reality. But, I mean, it's still that's
they
wild.
Lost 7 in a row, and they're only 8 points out of a playoffs.
Yeah, and now their GM is their coach.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's not, I'm not saying it's going to happen because they have to jump over the entire conference in order to make the playoffs, but it is wild to see when you show the two conference playoff pictures, and in the Eastern Conference, it's, I would say you show it maybe down to Philadelphia. Philadelphia is probably that last little wave of teams that could potentially slide into a wild card spot there. But then in the Western Conference, you have to show all 14 teams. Or all 15 teams, excuse me, because they all have a chance to win a playoff spot.
Yeah. And by the way, here we are. We'll give you the date this is being recorded. February 11th, you can allow yourself to talk about the playoffs in the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. It really, really is. And I think it's just going to keep leading to bigger things for this team. To be put in these situations, to have these kind of pushes to make themselves a playoff team. And I can't wait to see what happens in 14 days, Michael, right? February 25th is the trade deadline in the National Hockey League.
So we're exactly 2 weeks away from it.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen. And it's the whole league because of how it's going on. Who is a buyer? Who is a seller? What's out there? General Manager Don Waddell said the other day, the Canes are going to be looking, but they're going to make hockey trades. They're not going to make something for the future that gives up something right now. They're also not going to give up the future for something that would be a rental. They want to bring in players who are going to be here, going to be part of the program, going to be part of the solution. And if there's another deal out there where they could bring in a player like Nino Niederreiter into the fold, then by all means, go make that trade.
One of the most intriguing things about the trade deadline as it stands currently is what the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to do, because currently they sit in third place in the Metropolitan Division, but they might also be in a position where they have to trade Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin because they're unlikely to re-sign with the team this summer. And if you do that, you don't become a better team, I don't think.
All right, it leads to an interesting question, and a few teams are in the situation where they have unrestricted free agents that it looks like it's unlikely that they'll re-sign with the team that they're currently on. So what do you do? And everybody says you can't lose an asset for nothing in pro sports. But making the playoffs is important. Making the playoffs for certain teams is vitally important. A team like Columbus, their chances of advancing in the playoffs without Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin.
Or making it.
Exactly.
Because
without them,
they could easily
fall out of this race
the
way that things are going.
Mm-hmm.
But with them, their chances are exponentially greater. There's my big word of the day. There's a few teams that are looking at this situation, which is, what do you do? Do you hold on to these guys and try to make the playoffs and view them as your rentals?
Mm.
And maybe that's what it is. And while I don't think you ever want to lose anything for nothing, I would view it as, is my team better for the last 2 months of the season with these guys on my roster? And we'll take the chance. We'll take the chance of losing them for nothing. Because the other thing, teams out there know. Artemi Panarin's come out and said, I'm going to be a free agent. I'm going to test the waters. So teams know that. So why am I going to trade you anything for Artemi Panarin if, you know, you're Jarmo Kekäläinen and the Columbus Blue Jackets? You know what you're going to get? You're going to get a deal that the Sabres got in return for Evander Kane. you're going to possibly get the deal that the Hurricanes got in return for Jeff Skinner. When you know that this player isn't going to be there or the places he wants to go to is limited. So nobody's going to give you, here's the number one overall pick. Go ahead and take that. And, yeah, we're going to give you a good player and our number one prospect. That's not going to happen because teams know Columbus is in a rock and a hard place with this deal. So if I'm Columbus, I just hang on to him.
Yeah.
And take my chances.
Yeah, I mean, because as you said, you risk losing these assets for nothing, or you could keep them and potentially win a Stanley Cup.
Well, look, this is a situation, you know, this is the Canes cast. This is a situation the Hurricanes are facing with Michael Ferland. And for
nice
me,
segue.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Michael Ferland is the guy who I would look at. He is more valuable to the Carolina Hurricanes this season with what they're doing, with what he brings to the team, with what he brings to the ice. And if you're going to go into the offseason and you're not sure that you're going to sign him or that he'll re-sign, I'll still take my chances with that because I have until July 1st to try to get a contract with him and keep him here. But he's a guy where if you trade him, I don't know what you get back in return for him that helps this team try to make the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure the market is there currently for the Hurricanes to be able to acquire something that's going to make them a better team today.
Yes, yes.
And that would be my concern at the time, just given the Hurricanes' position in the standings. Because just as we were talking about with Columbus, I think you have to look at it as, okay, we can hang on to Ferland, use him as a self-rental, and that gives this team, I think, a better chance of making the playoffs than trading Ferland for future assets, yeah, which obviously does not help this team today try to make the playoffs.
Well, again, that's why I go back to it. You look at it, you know, it depends on which side of the looking glass you're on, but if you look at it and say, okay, Michael Ferland is our rental player, then that's fine. Or Michael Ferland is a guy who we think that we can re-sign and we're better off with him, so we're going to keep him because of what Michael Smith just said, which is, I think, 100% on the nose.
And what he brings, you know, we saw it yesterday. He tried to spark the Hurricanes early in that game in Columbus, you know, maybe realizing that his team needed something just to kind of get going and, you know, drop the gloves.
Yep.
Pretty good fight, too.
Yeah.
Both guys got in some good shots.
Against Gabriel, the young, there's no more enforcers anymore, but the tougher guy for the New Jersey Devils.
Now, obviously, it didn't work as he thought it would, but it was nice to see maybe him recognize that, okay, my team needs a little jump, needs a little spark here this afternoon.
Let's go.
Let's see if we can get the boys going.
Yeah, and he brings that element. And in the playoffs, you need a guy who, on a shift, can turn momentum with a big hit or a goal, or if somebody's being a little rambunctious, you tone him down. I mean, say you're playing Boston. I don't know if Brad Marchand is as froggy if you have a Michael Ferland on the ice who can kind of counterbalance the stuff he does.
Well, I think
I don't think that Marchand is licking Michael Ferland. I'm just saying.
Ooh. Maybe. Maybe not.
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm worried how intrigued you were with my scenario.
Well, because I just want to see the aftermath. Because I don't think it would end well for one of them.
If I was a betting man, I know who I would put my money on.
I do,
and
believe
his name is our first name.
But he spells it weird.
It sounds the exact same.
I do think we've seen teams take runs less.
Oh yeah.
They've taken fewer liberties.
I haven't seen as many liberties against the Carolina Hurricanes going into the boards or certain kind of antics that maybe we've seen in the past because they know that Michael Ferland's sitting on the bench.
Yep.
I agree with that. Or he's on the ice. Exactly.
Either way. Yeah. In either case, you're looking over and you're seeing him and you're knowing that if you're going to take this run, take this whack, you know, whatever, that you might have to deal with the consequences.
I was going to say, if any fans of The Wire out there, I am rewatching that series because the first run, I only made it through the first season and a half, so I'm rewatching from the beginning. And as Omar once said, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Omar coming.
Run. That's kind of the feeling. But Yeah, that's where we are with this scenario. A few other things going on with the Carolina Hurricanes as well here in the month of February. I just think that the way the schedule lays out, the Canes need to keep this momentum rolling, because looking ahead after the trade deadline, March gets a little tougher. Yep. As far as the competition level. And that's not saying anything, because we've talked about it. You know, everybody gets paid to play, but the Hurricanes coming up after they play Ottawa this week, they have the Edmonton Oilers and Dallas Stars at home. And no disrespect, but about to disrespect, you know, the Edmonton Oilers and the Dallas Stars, those should be wins. Then you've got to go play the New York Rangers at home with a couple of days off. And then you take the dad's trip, Florida and Dallas, and then come back, and a struggling LA Kings team is waiting for you to close out the month. So if you do the quick math, these seven games that are remaining for the Canes set up how crucial March is going to be for this team. Because you do see Pittsburgh, you do see Washington twice in March. I think you see Toronto in March. I'm not sure if Toronto is March or April when you get to that one.
It's April.
It's the April
last
game.
Week of the season.
All right. So, you know, you don't want to have to go into Toronto and play a game that matters for the Leafs the way that they're playing right now. But this is just how the setup has gone. But as long as the Canes keep doing what we've seen them do since January 1st, I'm not worried about this, because I think they are going to, you know, in four-game stretches, I'll take my chances that they'll win three out of four if they keep playing like this, especially with the stretch that we have right now for the Hurricanes.
The February schedule sets up very nicely because, as you mentioned, five of the next seven games to close out the month are against non-playoff teams.
Yep.
Dallas is sitting in a playoff spot in the Central Division currently. But then you do look ahead to March, and the schedule becomes a lot tougher, especially this stretch here with at Boston versus Winnipeg, at Nashville, at Colorado. The Canes always seem to have trouble in that building for whatever reason. At Columbus versus Buffalo versus Pitt versus Tampa versus Mini versus Montreal, at Washington versus Philly, at Pitt. All of those teams are playoff teams, or teams that you are going to be directly competing with for a playoff spot. So that's tough. That's a tough schedule.
By the way, what is it? It's 16 games in March, 9 at home, 7 on the road.
Yeah, and the schedule sets up nicely too, where when the Hurricanes get back from this road trip, 25 games left, 14 of them are at home, and just 11 of them are on the road. So they've played the bulk of their road schedule, where they've actually been really good since the beginning of 2019.
Yeah,
and that's a big testament to what this team has been able to accomplish here recently with their play. Maybe a plus, you know, heading into these big games against these big-time teams, is that the Hurricanes are hoping to get Jordan Staal back. That still remains to be seen when that might happen. He obviously is not on the road trip, so we don't have any further information to pass along. But the hope is that he's continued to sort of do his work in Raleigh while we've been away. And once we get back, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But we talked about it, I think, on the last podcast that the next big step for him is going to be to return to practice with the team, because he has done some skating on his own, at least was doing some skating on his own in January. But the next big step is for him to return to practice with the team. And once he does that, you're looking at maybe a week before he's able to be reinserted back into the lineup. And that could be a huge boost for the Hurricanes, especially when you're matching up against these deep, heavy teams.
Well, one thing that was encouraging was Jordan Staal helped out the Hurricanes when they put on a blind hockey clinic at PNC Arena on Monday, February 4th, so a week ago from the taping of this podcast. So he helped out with that. By the way, that was an absolutely, if you didn't see any of it, we showed it on Hurricanes Live. We showed it during the Hurricanes game as well, during the intermission. The fact that the team was giving PNC Arena's ice out there for the blind hockey players to come in and have a place to skate and be a part of that. And Jordan Staal came in and talked with the players. So it was pretty cool, pretty good to see. And we just can't thank all of the folks back at the Raleigh area who put that on for us, and the great folks at Moorhead School for the Blind. And of course, Emil Hartman, we give him a shout out right now.
Hi,
or a shout out if he was trying to play against Curtis McElhaney or Peter Mrazek this week. No offense, Emil. He's got good game, but not good enough to beat them.
I mean, if Sidney Crosby isn't scoring on Curtis McElhaney,
sorry, Emil ain't
Harmon.
Either. That ain't going to happen. That's not even a like it, keep it.
No, that's just a fact.
Exactly.
Science.
But
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
I always ask, do you have one? Did somebody share with you on the internet?
I don't think so. I'll think in the next 5 minutes.
You won't have one. You just won't have one. You just pull the fans here. Maybe they'll give you one.
I'll have one.
So I'll take care of it. Well, here's what I have for you right now, and it goes into a player who the Canes have acquired. It's Nino Niederreiter and how good he's been. He has 6 goals for the Carolina Hurricanes since being picked up. Will he get, and if you like it, you can keep it. Now you can send it right back. We got 26 games left on the schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will he get more than 12 goals on the season? Meaning he's got to score 6 more.
I thought you were going to say 10, and I was going to take it.
Oh, 10 is run wild with it.
I'm still going to take it.
Yep.
Because what he's brought to this club, how he's fit in with Sebastian Aho there on that top line, his net front presence, both at even strength and on the power play, he's been the perfect addition for this club. And his ability to find the back of the net and do so with regularity has helped what's been, at least heading into Sunday's game, the league's most potent offense since the turn of the new year. So, yeah, I'll take it.
You got another one for you on a goal-scoring category.
Ooh,
too.
Okay.
Andrei Svechnikov has 14 goals.
Will he get to 20?
Will he get 20?
Ooh. Oh, boy. I'd really like to see him get to 20.
Well, everybody would like to see him get to 20.
So that's 6 goals in the next 26 games?
Mm-hmm. Doing that quick math.
Yeah, really good at that. I'm going to take it. I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to take it because what does he have? He's got a couple in the last handful of games.
Yeah.
He's found the empty net.
Had the empty netter against the New York Rangers. So,
which is the first time.
He had 2 assists against Buffalo. He had a goal in Pittsburgh. So on this road trip, he has 2 goals and 2 assists.
And it was the first time in quite some time, apparently, that the Hurricanes had found the empty net twice in a game, which is kind of hard to believe. And a franchise record, 13 empty net goals this year.
That is what I find is hard to believe.
Hard to believe.
Because I figured the Stanley Cup year, they were having the lead late against lots of teams and just were burying empty
netters. But I wonder in games like that, was the lead just – maybe they had such a big lead that
– you know, winning games – it used to be you didn't – if you were down 2 goals, rare was the time you'd see a goalie get pulled, and now you see it anyway.
Yeah.
So, heck, you see it when you're down 3 goals now.
I'll take it.
Okay.
I think he gets to 20, and I think he gets to 20, and it'll take him right up until game 80, 81, 82, that last week of the season. I'll take it, though.
I'm going to call my shot.
Ooh.
He'll have it before they get to April.
Ooh. So you're calling it in March.
In March.
Wow, that's big. I'm going to say I'm gonna say he gets there, but it takes him until April.
All right. All right.
But he still gets there.
Either way, he gets there.
And he's had a great rookie season, I think, and you can.
Speaking
you can
of,
really
he just pops out on the ice right now. We're here at Canes practice, at Canadian Tire Centre.
You can really see the potential in the player that he's going to be.
Yeah, and you know he's just as he gets a little bit older, a little bit more adjusted to this game. He's got the power moves to, you know, drop the shoulder, go to the net. He's got really good hands, really good vision. You're just seeing it. It's not one of those things where you can sit there and say, I'm going to predict him to have this career, but you can see that it's building, and he's going to be a very good player to great player in this league for a long time.
I've got one.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep.
Who sent it to you?
Me.
All right.
My brain.
Lay it on me.
So we talked about the upcoming schedule and how 5 of 7 games are against teams currently not in a playoff position. Beginning on Tuesday in Ottawa, the Canes will start a 5-game winning streak. That would include wins at Ottawa versus Edmonton versus Dallas versus Rangers at Florida. I'm going to cut it off before at Dallas just because I don't want to get too greedy, but I'm going to say 5-game winning streak If you like it, take it. If not, send it right back.
Oh, I so want to take it.
The Hurricanes have had one five-game winning streak this season.
Yep.
It was sort of the it's what really started this whole stretch off.
Yep. I will... Gosh, they are clearly better than four of the five teams.
I will say the one
clearly better.
The back-to-back this weekend is the question mark, only because it's a back-to-back situation.
The Dallas game after playing Edmonton and what, that's a 7:30 game on Friday night the 15th, and then an 8 o'clock game, a rare 8 o'clock game at PNC Arena.
Yep.
On Saturday the 16th. So it's not like you're playing at 7 o'clock and then doing one of those weird turnarounds and playing at 5 o'clock.
You're actually gaining half an hour, too.
But, oh, man, don't make me send that back. Don't make me send it back.
Okay. Take it then. Take it and run with it.
I'm going to take it and run with it.
Perfect.
Small reservation. The asterisk on that is the Dallas game.
Well, and it's no easy task. I mean, we've seen how well the Canes were playing, three-game winning streak, only to have it snapped in New Jersey.
The bigger question is, and this isn't a part of like it, take it, Michael Smith, is if they win these five games in a row, where will they be in the standings? Will they be the second wild card? Because these are the only options, because Montreal right now has 69 points. And
nice.
I know, it's very nice in Montreal.
For them.
Yeah, very nice for them. But will they be in the second wild card spot or third place in the division? It's not a send it back. That's the question.
Five straight wins probably gets you.
They'd have 72 points.
Probably gets you into the third spot in the division. But I think the wild card there, too, is how well Columbus plays.
Right.
Because they've got a couple games in hand, and they've been playing well. They've won a couple big games out on this Western Conference road trip that they've been on. But they could also be without two of their best players come next week.
Yeah.
So, big question mark there.
All right. Biggest surprise this year so far for you with the Carolina Hurricanes?
Be it a
win streak, be it a player, be it something else.
I think it's just how well this goaltending tandem has worked. It's been the biggest surprise and the biggest improvement for the Carolina Hurricanes. It's been the biggest surprise because I don't think you expected a waiver wire pickup to have the impact he's had.
Yeah.
You don't expect a team to be able to rotate between two goaltenders the way this team has so effectively. And it's been the biggest improvement for obvious reasons, because the Hurricanes, night in and night out, are getting quality goaltending from either of these players, you know, in a situation where they're not having to worry about who's going to make a save or if somebody's going to make a save or, as you said, playing differently in front of them. To me, that's been the biggest surprise and biggest improvement for this club.
For mine, it's the play of Lucas Walmark that goes unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it is he's not racking up a 30-goal campaign with 50 assists, but how steady he is every single night for this team. I mean, how many times have you watched a game and he makes the right play at the right moment to either get the puck out of danger, keep a puck in the zone? Now he's being charged with some power play minutes because of necessity. And there's one other guy that I need to put in there, and that's Jordan Martinuk.
Mm-hmm.
When the deal for Jordan Martinuk happened over the summer, you're sitting here going, okay, here's a good fourth-line guy who can come in. He's going to kill penalties for you. He'll be a good player. Jordan Martinuk has 12 goals on the season. That's a career high. And he is maybe the best locker room guy I've been around in covering sports. Just how he fits into a locker room, what he knows his role is, what he has learned. I talked to him a couple of days ago and asked him about, you know, the influence Shane Doan had on him when he was in Arizona.
Yeah.
And, you know, what it was like. And he goes, Shane Doan is one of the best people you'll ever meet and be around. He goes, and if I can just take any of the lessons that he taught me or how he helped me and pass it on to some younger guys. And Jordan Martinook's not that old. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, none of these guys are.
He's 26, I think, and he's one of those players that you look at and you just say, okay, he's just really come into his own here with this team. He signed that two-year contract extension. So Lucas Walmark, who we were counting on being like a third-line center for this team this year, maybe a fourth-line center, has had to be bumped up with the injury to Jordan Staal. And then Jordan Martinook, who's playing center right now on a kind of makeshift line that just seems to work really well. And the production you've gotten from him on the ice, but I think what he's brought off the ice, you can't measure. It's invaluable to what he has meant to this hockey club.
And that's the other thing that's been crucial for the Hurricanes in this stretch is their health.
Yeah.
And the team's ability to avoid any major injuries, of course, aside to the one to Jordan Staal that's kept him out for the last 22, 23 games. I think that's been crucial to the Hurricanes' success, to have that stability in the lineup, to have guys healthy, or at least guys, you know, not banged up enough to have to sit out.
Yep.
That's been critical to this team and will continue to be, I think, critical for this team down the stretch of the season, because you don't want to have to enter into a situation where you're trying to plug guys into Charlotte and figure things out in what we've already outlined is going to be a very difficult March schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got one, so I know that you won't have one next week. But I was impressed.
I'll think about it.
It was impressed. You came up with your own?
Right on the spot.
You made it happen right here.
Did you watch the Grammys last night?
No, God no.
I turned it on once we got to the hotel. We got to the hotel at about, 9 p.m. Eastern time? I flipped it on, and then I realized, why am I watching this? Because I don't really listen to any of this music.
Yeah, nope. I had nothing to add.
And so they were, you know, giving out these awards to people who I...
Well, you already made your opinion of Travis Scott known for the Super Bowl halftime.
Yeah. And he performed again last night, and it was just terrible.
Well, that's one man's opinion that I will co-sign. That I will co-sign on.
It is just one man's opinion.
I will agree with you. I will not disagree with you on that one.
North Carolina's own Fantasia was on the Grammys last night.
Oh, that's nice.
Tribute to Aretha Franklin. It was very well done.
Excellent.
Jennifer Lopez did Motown. That was kind of weird.
I didn't watch any of it, so I really don't care. So
she can sing.
Yes, she can.
And perform. Motown's an interesting genre for her, though.
By the way, the open that I was talking about was the Grammy for the song Sicko Mode. That was Travis Scott, Drake, Big Hawk, and Swaley. And then you can see how many people got credit for writing on that
song.
Oh,
yeah, there's my name.
Yeah, Michael Smith.
Yep.
And what I saw is the Web's Michael Smith. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know this, man. So... right there, you were right in between Aubrey Graham and John Edward Hawkins. And who can forget the immortal Jacques Webster and Sidell Young?
Well, they're songbirds of our generation.
I've always said that Travis Scott, Drake, Big Hawk, and Swaley with the 45 people who write is exactly like the Elton John, Bernie Taupin combo of the 70s.
Very comparable.
Exactly. By the way, Bill Bernstein, you should have turned that off the second I got to that point. Michael Smith. So is there anything else you want to add here on the Canes cast?
No. Nope.
We are coming down the stretch of this episode.
That's all I have to add from the Grammys.
All right. Nothing else you want to add? Life on the road, 8 days on the road. How do you maintain your diet? Because you've lost basically a large dog in weight this off season, and you've been able to keep it off on the road. Well,
apparently it's not helped my health because, as you can probably hear, I'm congested again.
Well, I don't think that dropping weight has anything to do with fighting off colds and going through different temperatures.
Yeah. This.
Although notice, three of you is one of me, and I am as healthy as an ox right now.
The travel, I think, is catching up to me. It's time to go home for a little while. And see, because I haven't seen in a while, and it'd be nice to see.
Same here. Yeah. Well, and as well.
Yes.
So we're.
We had to get as many of those in as we could.
You really.
I made that tough on that.
You really punched the ticket there, but it's in, and there's no going back. So, all right, Michael Smith, I think that'll do it for us.
Yep.
We will come to you next Monday for sure, and we will have, when we get to you, three games to talk about. The Ottawa Senators game coming up tomorrow night, tonight, or that was already played, followed by the Oilers and Stars at home, that back-to-back where Michael Smith has made the bold prediction and made me take this, that the Canes will win five games in a row, and they will be in third place if they do that in the Metro Division.
Now people are going to blame us if it doesn't happen. Oh,
you know what? I'm tired of this. All right, I didn't want to go here, but now we're going to go on a rant.
Oh, no.
I'm tired of this. So here's the thing. If we point out in our jobs, like I pointed out, Keith Kincaid was 7-2-0 against the Carolina Hurricanes. And somebody goes, oh, great, that means he's going to be fantastic tonight. But if I point out.
Devils fans would have said the opposite.
But this is my point.
Correct.
But if I would have pointed out, oh, Curtis McElhinney is 7-2-0 against the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Canes lost. Oh, it's your fault. But if I pointed out Curtis McElhinney was 7-2-0 against the Penguins and he got a shutout, do I get credit that I pointed that out? So that's my thing. It can't work both ways. I can't be favoring the other team and then taking away from the team I cover and the team I work for. It doesn't work like that. I always go back to that commercial. That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Sports.
No, it drives me crazy.
No, I mean, that's fandom. Fandom is sometimes illogical, and we can all.
But if I mention a no-hitter. If a guy's throwing a no-hitter, and I think you know I'm a Yankees fan, so I'll go down that road.
What?
Yeah, exactly. But if I mention that, you know, for the New York Yankees, that their pitcher is throwing a no-hitter, say CeCe Sabathia, he's throwing a no-hitter. If it gets broken up, it's my fault. But if he goes out and throws the no-hitter and I mention the no-hitter, I then jinx the other team by telling them that, well, he's throwing a no-hitter against you.
You should get credit for the
no-hitter
in that case.
It doesn't work that way. It's just sports.
It's like when Tony Romo razzed Jim Nantz for the field goal. The field
exactly.
goal comment.
Now, don't get me wrong.
It's just the way it works. It's funny coincidence.
Yes.
It's and maybe it's our fandom trying to rationalize something that, you know.
Can't be rationalized.
Correct. You know. I know we're diving deep into the psychology
but
of what this is.
In sports, there are some things that are hard. Pitching a no-hitter is hard. Getting a shutout in the National Hockey League is hard.
Scoring a goal.
Yes.
Seems
these are
pretty
difficult
hard.
Things. Although that kind of undermines my getting a shutout.
Well.
Comment. But you know what I'm driving at. It's just one of those things. And I get it. I get it. Look, Michael Smith and I are fans, too. Fans gonna fan.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the thing that just drives me insane. So if I say it for the other team and it happens, I made it happen because I pointed out the other team does something good. If I say it for the team that Michael and I work for or that I'm a fan of and it doesn't happen, I mushed it.
I knew it.
Oh, I got that, too. I got that. That came out. Do you want to share this with everybody? It's late enough in the podcast to do it. About the wardrobe, which we've talked about several times. About my wardrobe on the for pretty much every game. If you look at the shirt and tie or suit and tie combinations that I wear. So the other night in Buffalo, New York, I had on a blue suit with a yellow tie and a white shirt. And the white and blue checked shirt. And the only comment that I've gotten all year on my wardrobe is Mike Maniscalco's wearing a blue suit and a yellow tie and the little emoji. To which I had to respond, have you been watching all year? Why would that be important if they watched all year, the Web's Michael Smith?
Because you wear the opponent's colors each and every game.
When I can.
When you can.
When I can. When
your wardrobe allows it.
Exactly. Like, sometimes it's tough. I never realized how many teams wear some form of black and red in this league. Like, I should just own 30,000 red ties.
It was a very 90s color combination. I love it. Black and red is one of my favorite color combinations. It was also very popular in the 90s. Yeah. I also love the 90s.
I love the 80s, and I love the 90s as well. Good shows. But no, I do that as a point of I try to not show favoritism. And I know people are going to be like, well, doesn't that mean you're showing favoritism? I'm like, no. But if you ever want to know who the Canes are playing tonight, and here's something else, a quick reminder for me, this is who they're playing tonight.
It's a fun little Easter egg.
Yeah. So we put that in there. Now, there's some teams, some games where I can't, but, you know, it's just hard to do. And I like wearing purple, so I have a purple tie and I have a purple shirt that I will wear every now and again. But no teams in the league wear purple anymore. The Anaheim Ducks kind of sort of do with their alternate.
I wish they would have gone.
And the LA Kings used to wear it, so.
Yeah. I wish they, instead of black, I wish they would have gone full eggplant.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what I try with. But that's why, thank you for trying to say aha, but I do that for every team. In fact, if you watch the game tomorrow night against the Senators, or if you watched it, you would have noticed my tie will be red and gold.
Huh. Now imagine
you know.
That.
Now you know. My tie yesterday was red and black.
If you happen to see me wandering around, I'll be in blue.
Really?
For no reason, really, except it's the only thing I have left.
The only thing you have left that's clean?
Exactly.
And see, that's the thing. By the way, it also puts pressure on me to pick my outfits, which I do. And by the way, if anybody wants to sponsor the Webbs, Michael Smith, and me as far as apparel goes and clothing, we are for it. Or sponsor the podcast.
Yeah.
Sponsor Canes Cast.
Yeah.
Brought to you by whoever's fine clothing.
If you want to sponsor me in life, you can also do that.
All right.
We're open for anything.
Exactly. All right. Well, practice is picking up, and we're going to pay a lot more attention to it here at Canadian Tire.
Santra.
Thank you.
You've given a lot of pump to Canadian Tire, and they are not a sponsor.
Santra.
The Santra of hockey in Ottawa.
Well, you never know when we're going to need some snow tires. Evidently, maybe on the way out.
Yeah.
All right. For the Webbs, Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
This has been Some Kind of Canes Cast. We'll talk to you next week.
See you later.
Thank you.